verse. Translation incorporated by Srila Prabhupada. The son of Trishanku was Harichandra. Because of Harichandra, there was a quarrel between Vishwamitra and Vasishta, who for many years fought one another, having been transformed into birds. If you read the story, it's pretty funny. Vishwamitra and Vasishta were always inimical. So formerly, Vishwamitra was a Kshatriya. And by undergoing severe austerities, he wanted to become a Brahmin. But Vasishta would not agree to accept him. In this way, there was always a disagreement between the two. Later, however, Vasishta accepted him because of Vishwamitra's quality of forgiveness. Once Harichandra performed a yajna for which Vishwamitra was the priest. But Vishwamitra, being angry at Harichandra, took away all his possessions, claiming them as a contribution of dakshina. Vasishta, however, did not like this, and therefore a fight arose between Vasishta and Vishwamitra. The fighting became so severe that each of them cursed the other. One of them said, quote, may you become a bird, unquote, and the other said, quote, may you become a duck, unquote. Thus, both of them became birds and continued fighting for many years because of Harichandra. We can see that such a great mystic yogi as Subhuti became a victim of sense gratification, and such great sages as Vasishtha and Vishwamitra became birds. This is the material world. Abrahma, Bhuvana, Loka, Punaravarti, Narjuna. Within this material world, or within this universe, however elevated one may be in material qualities, one must suffer the conditions of birth, death, old age, and disease. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi. Therefore, Krishna says that this material world is simply miserable, dukhalayam mashashvatam. The Bhagavatam says, padam padam yadvipadam. At every step here, there is danger. Therefore, because the Krishna consciousness movement provides the opportunity for the human being to get out of this material world simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, this movement is the greatest benediction in human society. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jandana Shalakaya Shakshir Militan Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vrindavan. Panchakalpa Parivischaka Prasanna Gaiva Chakritana Paraleyo Vishnaviyo Namanamo Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunatananda Sri Advaita Varadhar Siva Sarigoda Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Ram Rama Hare Hare. So this is the opening story of this seventh chapter of the Bhagavatam, ninth canto. And it's very appropriate that Srila Prabhupada gives this interesting purport to a seemingly strange story. It may seem to us, you know, that there's stories of cursing and counter-cursing by great personalities. It may seem so kind of odd. And some people might even say that it's mythical. You know, men turning into birds and quarreling for years and years and years. But anyway, Prabhupada is very expertly taking the essence. And as we continue to read the whole story of Harichandra, we will see that there are so many points in which people could actually downgrade the Bhagavatam. Especially at the very end, you will see that there is a topic of slavery. When you continue with the story, we will see that that's a topic that is a very touchy one. And so, however, Prabhupada here is telling us that despite the fact that many living beings can become so powerful and so elevated and so qualified in so many ways in the material world, not only in the human society, that, you know, in human society you become a very prominent person if you become very well educated or if you're very politically influential poor if you are very wealthy. So these three things, political power, military power, wealth, and knowledge, can create in human beings a sense of accomplishment or elevation. But we are talking about here two personalities. These were yogis that not only were they part of human society, but their fame and their accomplishments went beyond this planet. These two yogis, these two munis, they were known all over the universe. They are known all over the universe. And yet, despite all of their accomplishment as great yogis, I mean, these are powerful people. These are people who can create universes, like we will see in the development of the whole story. So that's a great power. But yet, Prabhupada's explaining in the purport, despite all this, they cannot control themselves in their anger. They just start cursing each other, cursing and counter-cursing. And of course, being powerful yogis, powerful munis, the curses did take effect. Prabhupada, however, takes this story as another sign that despite all of the material qualifications that we may get, the influence of the material world by way of the three modes of material nature, in which anger is one of them, will take effect. We are, technically speaking, helplessly under the influence of the three modes of material nature. And therefore, Prabhupada quotes here Bhagavad Gita twice and Bhagavatam once, in saying that the material world in and of itself is not a place to stay permanently. This is a very interesting point, actually, because in our religious experience of human society, there are deep religious beliefs that this material world is made for our enjoyment. We find that especially in the, not in Buddhism, but in all other religions pretty much, the prominent religions of the world, is that this world is created for our enjoyment. So the first premise right there is contrary to the teachings of the Bhagavatam. However, for thousands of years, civilizations have been built, societies have been built upon this notion that this world is for our enjoyment. And yet, Prabhupada says here in the purport that that's not the case. That unless and until we realize and we understand that the material world, not just this miserable tiny little planet in which we live, but the whole material world, the heavens, all the different degrees of heavenly planets, all the different degrees of middle planetary systems, and even hellish planets, this is all actually meant to be given up by a true transcendentalist. That's very radical, because that goes contrary to deeply held religious beliefs of other systems of religion, in which the whole deal is to stay here. And that's why you find that throughout the last 5,000 years, 4,000 years, people have been fighting like cats and dogs over this earth on the basis of religious beliefs. Yet the Bhagavatam here is telling us that, look, regardless of what your accomplishment may be, we may become great yogis, great renowned persons all over the universe, and yet, the influence of the material world, the influence of the material energy is spread out all over the place. And one cannot free oneself freely, so easily. So Prabhupada quotes Krishna here, Abhrama Bhuvanaluka Punaravartin Arjuna. So from Krishna literally saying, from the topmost planet of Brahma, all the way down to this most insignificant planet, Krishna is saying, this is all places of misery. Where not only the palpable, concrete ways in which we see that this material world is not meant for happiness, because Prabhupada translates this quote by saying that there is birth, old age, disease, and death. But the verse also implies that not only these concrete ways in which we see that these bodies are not meant for eternal existence, but also inwardly, in the case of the two munis here, being overpowered by anger. Those are also symptoms of material existence, not just the bodily changes of death, old age, and disease, but also inwardly. There is Krishna implies in many and directly explains in many other slokas in the Bhagavad Gita that there are so many other issues, not just the material body, but also the subtle body, basically. We have to get rid of. We have to get rid of it. False ego, anger, illusion, like that. What's that verse? Krishna explains that. Which is, Krishna actually describes step by step how is it that the transcendental, pure living entity can actually be acting in the material platform. And then step by step, Krishna is saying that, you know, when we contemplate the senses, sense enjoyment, the desire. So these two munis, great powerful munis, they were still under the control of anger, which meant, by implication, that they were still under the control of illusion. And so, Prabhupada quotes another part of the Bhagavad Gita, Dukkhalaya Masasatam, and then to finalize his emphasis, he quotes the Bhagavatam, Palam Palam Yat Vipalam. This is a danger of every step. Now somebody might say, well, this is a very, very pessimistic way of looking at the world. But in other words, because somebody might say, wait, this is a creation. This creation of this planet, this universe created by God, why should it be bad? Why would God create something so bad? Why are you so pessimistic about the world? And the point is that the description of the soul in the Bhagavad theology or the Bhagavad philosophy is that the soul cannot display its divinity. The soul cannot be so satisfied unless and until that soul is actually connected with the service of the Lord. Because you could actually, and many people have come up with this, including the impersonalists, including the Mayavadis, they can understand, they can come to understand that we are not the material body, that the transcendental living entity is ontologically speaking independent from the physical existence of the material body. They can understand that. But that's only half of the story of the soul. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, and the Bhagavatam expands so beautifully, that the soul not only is transcendental, spiritual, and divine, but also that divinity can be manifested and displayed only in connection with the service of Krishna. This is why the impersonalists and the Mayavadis cannot maintain their understanding eternally, because the soul is eternally active. The soul is eternally engaged in the service of the Lord. The soul cannot be eternally inactive. One can remain for a very long time inactive, but sooner or later, that inherent nature of the soul will urge us to start acting again, either in the material platform or in the spiritual platform. Therefore, we put this into perspective. These two munis, even though they were great personalities with great power, mystic power, they still were not really, so to speak, in the level of a transcendental living entity engaged in transcendental loving service of Krishna. Because when that happens, even though there are all mystic powers available to the pure devotees, devotees have all mystic powers, but the devotees are completely uninterested in anything that is not related to Krishna. And this is why Prabhupada ends his purport by saying that the Krishna conscious movement provides the opportunity for the human beings to get out of this material world simply by chanting Hare Krishna. The chanting of the Hare Krishna is the greatest benediction that this movement is bringing to human society. And it's so simple. Somebody might say, wait, you know, that's so simplistic. Well, it's not. It may be simplistic, but that's what is being, that's what's recommended by the scriptures, and that's what's recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who started this Krishna conscious movement. That simply by chanting the holy names of Krishna, we can actually accomplish what is otherwise impossible to accomplish. Without going through the process of parampara, there is no way that we can accomplish freedom from material existence. One can get to be an impersonalist and hang around the Brahmayoti for some time, but eventually the inherent nature of the soul will just bring these people down again into activities. And so, to be on the safe side, the chanting of the holy names of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is enabling us to be in what Prahlad Maharaj calls, again, he defines the different steps, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smananam. The holy names of Krishna are so powerful, being Krishna himself, that the holy names of Krishna is everything. When we are chanting the holy names of Krishna, we are actually not only presence of Krishna, but also in the presence of Krishna's energies, in the presence of Srimati Radharani, in the presence of all the energies of the Lord. Because Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always accompanied by his energies. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with his associates, the Panchatattva, personification of Brother, you know, of devotion, personification of Radharani, personification of the devotee, personification of devotional energy. So Krishna is always accompanied by all these energies, the personification of these energies. So when we chant the holy names of Krishna, we are in the company of all the energies of the Lord. And of course, being in the presence of the Lord gives us the opportunity to advance in the spiritual life by first hearing. Most devotees have the experience that unless they heard the holy name of Krishna chanted by either other devotees or by Srila Prabhupada, it's like it touches the soul. And even though we may lack words to explain that experience of when you get touched in the soul, deep in the soul, you still feel it. And there is an impetus to hear more. So that's called Shravanam. Shravanam and then Kirtanam. And because we're hearing, we like to chant the same way. We like to hear about Krishna. We like to talk about Krishna. We like to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. And that hearing and chanting provides the basis for remembrance. Then we start remembering all the time. We start remembering Krishna more and more. We're seeing the material existence means really forgetfulness of Krishna. That's what material existence is all about. It's completely forgetfulness of Krishna. When we start interrupting that forgetfulness by the chanting of the holy names, then we start gaining our true nature. And that's remembrance of Vishnu, Vishnu Smaranam. And we had complete remembrance of Lord Vishnu, then all the other steps follow that Prahlada Maharaj talks about. Varshanam, Arshanam, Palatsevanam, Atmanivedanam. We start engaging in service. We start engaging in worshiping. We start engaging in association with pure devotees. And so then everything is awakened. And it all starts by the Hare Krishna mantra. So therefore, we should be very thankful to Prabhupada, to the acharyas, to the devotees who encourage us to stay in the Krishna conscious movement. There is whatever little thing we do for Krishna in this Krishna conscious movement, Krishna won't forget. And so it is important for all of us to stay connected with the Krishna conscious movement by participation. And that's because of the basis of participation in the Krishna conscious movement is love, is bhakti, love for Krishna, love of God. And that love of God is really what steers Krishna, Krishna's emotions. When you read, when we enter into the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, we will see all this, how emotional Krishna is. Krishna is very emotional. Krishna is very, because he's very loving. And therefore, whatever little thing we do for Krishna in the Krishna conscious movement, Krishna becomes very emotional about it. Krishna becomes very loving because he's a person. He's a supreme person. So we shouldn't think that when we are executing devotional service, somehow or other it's like a burden. Sometimes we think like that, right? Especially in the beginning. But then there is a taste. There is that ruchi, you know, that transcendental taste to do more or to engage more, whatever we have. Some devotees have the ability to engage their artistic talents, other devotees have the ability to to serve the deities so nicely, other devotees have abilities to preach Krishna consciousness, other devotees have so many abilities. And whatever we feel inspired by, that particular ability or talent, we should hang on to it and develop it and perfect it, if that's what gives us the impetus and the energy to participate in the Krishna conscious movement. So we should be very thankful to Srila Prabhupada that Prabhupada devised this whole scheme, transcendental scheme. This whole, not only in terms of spiritual philosophy or theological writings and all this writing he did, but also in the way he organized this, and all the way he organized the Krishna conscious movement. Anybody can participate. Anybody can chant. Anybody can get purified. There's no barriers to entry into the transcendental service of Krishna. And so to summarize here, we should understand that despite all this advancement that we can do in the material world, just like Vasishtha and Vishwamitra, unless we are engaged in the transcendental love and service of Krishna, we will not be able to attain full satisfaction. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu. Well, they were not ordinary human beings. Absolutely not. That's clear. It will become more clear as we keep reading the story. But that only can tell us that the power of anger can actually destroy everything that we can accomplish. I mean, think about it. I mean, Vishwamitra became, you know, here Prabhupada is talking about this sudra, right? This chandala that became a sudra. This person wanted to go to heaven. And then because Vishwamitra promised him that, yes, you could go, he blessed him, basically. And he actually was going into heaven without any... Because according to the Vedic system, in order for you to enter into the heavenly planets, you have to qualify yourself. But Vishwamitra broke the rules. He wanted this chandala, lower than the sudra, to go to heaven. That's not possible. But yet, by his mystic power, he was bending the rules and actually promoting this chandala into heaven. Then the demigod says, no way. So they brought him down, and so there was this fight. And so when Vishwamitra realized that he was not going to defeat the demigods, then he created a whole universe with a whole heaven for this guy. So that power, I mean, that power is, it's like power of Brahma. Brahma is the creator of the universe. So somehow or other, Vishwamitra found a space somewhere else to create another universe just for this guy. That's how powerful he was. But yet, the power of anger is more powerful than that mystic power. So they were not ordinary human beings. They were not ordinary universal beings. But yet, at the same time, the power of anger, which really is under the control of the modes of material nature, supersedes these powers. Yes, Prabhu. Well, Krishna explains that if we go by Krishna, anger comes from attachment to sense gratification. To some extent, yes. Because mystic power doesn't mean, when we attain mystic powers, it doesn't mean you're free from sense gratification. In fact, Prabhupada explains also, he quotes the previous story we just ended, the story of Subhari Muni. Again, to emphasize what you're raising here, that even though this Subhari Muni doing tapasya under the waters for 60,000 years or whatever it was, 65,000 years of the demigods, in the end, because the sense gratification was there, he fell victim of it by seeing two fishes mating. They're not liberated. Yeah, actually, liberation starts by even the impersonalist can attain liberation, but that's just the starting point of liberation. Liberation really means to be engaged in the service of Krishna, because one can make it. You can make it to the point of the first at the gates of liberation, but if you don't enter into the liberated world of Krishna consciousness, of activity, transcendental activity, you're still at the gate. Neither you have left the material world, nor have you entered into the transcendental world. You're at the gate. You can't stay at the gate forever. So you got to go back or go forward. So these munis, they had great power, great mystic power, great fame and everything. But because there was no pure devotional service, they engage in cursing and chanting cursing. This mother, Lakshmi. Right.